Some of you know that I've been representing ADRA for quite a while. It used to be SAWS. And we have loved that work of reaching out around the world and helping people. I read this from Matthew. When the king gathers the people together, he says, "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." Then the righteous will answer, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, and thirsty and gave you something to drink, and a stranger and took you in, or when you were in prison?" And then the king replied, "I tell you the truth, whatsoever you did for one of the least of these my brothers, you did for me." This has been really the basic for ADRA, the Adventist Development Relief Agency, is to go out and help people in need. And you know, you can go out and preach to people. You can go out and do a lot of preaching, but if they're hungry and starving or clothed, without any clothes, naked and cold, they're not going to listen to you. They're not going to hear you. But if they're hungry and you give them something to eat and they need help, they're going to listen. And then when someone comes to share the bread of life with them, they will eat that too. And so this is what really what ADRA is all about. Now, when you leave today from the church, the deacons are going to help. We're going to give you some a little catalog and some leaflets from ADRA. And we'd like to have each family to have at least one of those. And I was going to bring them up and show you, but I forgot. My forgetter is getting better all the time. And I probably shouldn't tell you, but I'm going to tell you about it. We're going to run a little overtime. I can see that because we're getting started late. But what's Sabbath all for? It's to be a fellowship together and to worship the Lord. I had a dream last night, and I hope it's not a true dream. I dreamed that I was giving a service here, and a lot of people. And I kept on. And pretty soon I looked up, and most of them were leaving. And finally, actually, with so many people, we were having it over in the gym. And then finally, I looked, and there was just two little boys playing back there in the corner. Well, we'll see what happens today. And the title of my sermon maybe is not too good. Why are we here? But I want you to know that God has a purpose for our lives. And He has a purpose for your life. He has a purpose for my life. He has a purpose for different lives, different people, for different things. We don't all have that same talent to do things. And I believe that the purpose He had for my life was not what I had as a purpose for my life to begin with. And we're going to talk some about that. For years, I never did share this experience, but I think it's better sometimes to share my own experience rather than someone else's. But the purpose He had for my life and our lives was somewhere overseas and around the world in different places. As missionaries, my wife and I and family, we were about 25 years as missionaries in Southeast Asia. And then after that, we got to working with ADRA and working. And I believe, may have lost count, but around in the past 21 years of retirement, I think we've, in January, we came from our 21st overseas mission, short term, in retirement. And to go out into some of these African countries and some of the situations we've been, so many times I have asked myself and almost cried out, Lord, why am I here? I know we're working out in Somalia. In Somalia, that was in 92, and Somalia still has no peace there. They're fighting ever since the warlords were fighting there back in the 90s, in the early 90s. They still had no government and no peace. We get a little emails, a Google on different newspapers from that about the situation in Somalia, and every day there's a 5 or 6 killed here, there's a dozen killed here, there's 20 over here. They're just fighting all the time. But we were able to help, and out there was starving people. When we were there, the United Nations estimate was more than 1,000 people dying every day from starvation. And we think of all the food and the extra things that we have here in our country. But we went out there and we started a program and started feeding centers and helping these people with their needs. And it just brought joy to our hearts. But there were times, many times, there was shooting going on all the time. In fact, we called it the Mogadishu Symphony. All night you could hear shooting going on. I had some of my, we were inside of a wall where we lived, and some Muslim people gave us a place to stay and a place to office there. And inside that wall, we could hear shooting. We had guards, they had guards out there. And I know one evening, I've got even some videos of it, because the shooting was going on, terrible shooting, and here's one of our guards was brought in and had been shot through the arm. And then pretty soon they called out and said, hey, there's another guard down out there. And so I ran out with a doctor that we had there. We ran out and we pulled in one that was down by the gate. But he was shot right through his chest here, and he was dead. And I would cry out, Lord, why in the world am I in a place like this? Why do you bring me here? Because I thought I was going where God wanted me to go and doing what God wanted me to do. But we find ourselves in that situation. Why are we here? But God had a purpose. And I'm going to read something that this lady, this Muslim lady, and I want to tell you this. In our country, we have a very bad image in our mind when we think of Muslims. But I find that the common, ordinary, God-worshipping, the Creator God-worshipping Muslim, they're beautiful people. Just like in any religion, there are those that are radical. Think of the Crusades, what the Christians were doing then. During the Crusades, called themselves Christians, and trying to wipe out and kill out the other people. And we get that image of the Muslim people because we hear this all the time. I was going to show a little 5-minute video of Adra, but we'll have our videos afterwards because of our shortness of time. But when we were working with those Muslim people out there, and one time there was one family that asked us, we were having a little party together, they'd invited us there, and they said, what religion are you? I said, well, I'm a Christian. And this fellow said, oh, no, you're no Christian. And it surprised me. I said, yes. No, he said, you're not. He said, Christians come over here to our country, and he says they mess around with our women, and they drink liquor, and they smoke cigarettes, and they eat pork, and all of these things, and you don't do any of those. What religion are you? Well, I said, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist. Well, what do you believe? I said, we believe in the Creator God. Well, so do we. And I went on down the line. We believe in these prophets and so forth on down the line. And so do we. And then I said, and we believe in Jesus. Well, they said, we believe that Jesus was one of the highest of the prophets. And he was such a good, caring person that he helped so many people and the sick and the suffering and good teachings and loved people. And was treated so terribly that God took him to heaven. And he's in heaven now. And he'll be coming back in the last day. so close, so close of the good, God-fearing, worshiping Muslim. We lived there and worked there for, I worked there for 6 months. I didn't ask Jean, my wife, I didn't ask her to come there because she doesn't like to hear shooting, gunfire, and it was going on all the time. But God protected us so many times, so many times. And they gave us a place to have an office, this family. They gave us a place, a house to live in, furnished it, everything. And I tried to pay them for it, and they wouldn't take it. They said, no. And I was going to help hire the guard. I said, don't you ever hire a guard. If you hire a guard, then if you have a problem with them and you have to let them go, he says, you're a dead man. So he says, we'll take care of that. We know how to handle the guards. They hired all the guards. We used their vehicles. Our vehicles hadn't come yet. They didn't come for a few months. Their drivers, a machine gun up on top of the roof, and two or three guys with AK-47s to protect the vehicle and protect us. They did all of that for us. As we traveled around and tried to do work, we started a little hospital, a little clinic. And then, after all of that, they brought food and put on my table every day I was there, three times a day. And I says, I kept track of those, and I said, I've got to pay for this. And they said, no, you're not. I said, sure. I says, I've kept track of these meals, I got to pay for them. No. She said, why should we take food from ADRA, or money from ADRA? It's like taking food right out of our starving children's mouths. And this is what she wrote after we had come back. She wrote this on an email. If only people were all like you folks, and she's talking about Seventh-day Adventists, there would have been no wars in this world. There is no single time that I see some love and kindness that I don't remember you. I'm glad that you're going around and showing people the right way to live and to learn. I know that you are a devoted Christian, but I strongly believe in my Muslim faith. At the same time, I have this deep attachment to you folks and what you continue to do, because we all believe in God and His loving kindness. If we can only concentrate more on our common good rather than our differences and leave God to be the judge. I hope one day we'll see you again. I miss you so much. Love, Khadija. And when I read that, I got the answer to my question. Lord, why are we here? Because we touched somebody's heart. We helped some people. And answered the question, why we're here. And when we think of situations like that, we've been in many different countries and see so many different suffering people. And then so many problems, so many times facing death. But God brought us through. He had a purpose for our lives. You know, you don't always follow that purpose that God has for your life. Sometimes we go astray. And we have in the Bible here, we have experiences and examples of people who have gone astray that were God's chosen people, that were His prophets. What about Jonah? God had a message, gave message to Jonah to go to Nineveh and to teach and to help these people. What did Jonah do? Jonah was a prophet of God. He turned around and went the other way. Jumped on a ship and tried to get away from God. It didn't work. And it shows me that God, in His loving care, no matter if we go astray, His love, He wants to pull us back. He wants to take us back. He'll take us back. And you know what happened to Jonah? God even prepared a fish to save him. And Jonah kind of had second thoughts while he was in that fish. Jonah kind of had second thoughts, and when he got out of that fish, he went and did what God told him to do. And even then he complained, because he said, here, look, all the people turned around, turned their own way. You didn't destroy them like you said you was going to. And because they repented, he didn't destroy them. And we have other examples. What about that good prophet Jeremiah? Jeremiah and all the good things that he did. But you know, I read over here in Jeremiah. Look what I read in Jeremiah. And it's Jeremiah 20, verse 18. And Jeremiah said, "Why in the world did I ever come out of the womb?" In other words, why was I ever born? And here you have Jeremiah say, "Why in the world am I here? Why are we here? Why was I ever born? So much trouble facing all the time." And he says, "I see trouble and sorrow to the end of my days, my shame." Now, this is God's prophet, Jeremiah. And a wonderful prophet and a wonderful things that he did, but he was tormented and tortured, and then even after all the wonderful things, he'd been running away. Well, I read over here in the beginning of Jeremiah, and we find this. Before what God said to Jeremiah, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations." Before he was born, God had a plan for his life. But he didn't always follow that plan, but he followed it pretty good, but he got discouraged. "Why in the world was I ever born?" You're born to be a prophet to the nations. He had a purpose for his life. And brothers and sisters, he has a purpose for your life. He has a purpose for my life. And I'll bring one more example. One more example of this, why am I here and so forth, and people that didn't always follow. And what was the other one I was going to talk about? Oh, Elijah. Was Elijah a good man? Look what Elijah did there on the mountain. Had such a connection with God and called down fire from heaven to burn up the sacrifices and even burn up the water. The prophet Elijah. And then when some woman got after him, what did he do? He ran. It's hard to imagine. He stood up against all those prophets of Baal, but yet when this wicked woman got after him, he says, "I'm going to take your skin." He ran. And he hid in the cave. And then the Lord found him and says, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" "What are you doing here? Go on." And so I bring things out to let you know that probably not very many of you here that have not made a mistake sometime. I heard somebody say this one time. He says, "I think I'm the only one that made a mistake." I made a mistake once. I guess it was one of my brothers. He says, "I made a mistake once." And what was that? He said, "I thought I was wrong when I was really right." Sometimes we get that attitude about ourselves, you know. It's always the other guy that's making mistakes. But we make mistakes. But we have such a loving God, our Heavenly Father, that no matter what mistake we made, no matter what we do, even if it isn't a mistake, but it's bad, if we will turn around and look to him and ask for forgiveness and change the way we're going and go the way that he wants us to go to begin with, that's what he wants us to do. He accepts us for that. Now, I'm just going to tell a little experience of what people have asked me too. Why did you become a missionary? Why did you decide to work overseas? Well, when I was a kid, growing up, just as far back as I can remember, I had a chronic ear infection. And any of you have ever had an earache? Boy, I tell you, with antibiotics and now you do days you don't have them so much, but we didn't have them those days. And I had infection in my ears. I'd have earaches every winter, earaches, sometimes both ears at a time, right on through my ears up until... And when I was going to the academy, and I was working in the sawmill and logging, I grew up that way. I had a job in the sawmill when I was 5 years old. And that was to take a wash tub underneath the head saw, and it'd fill with sawdust, and I'd drag it out and dump it. And I kept the sawdust out from under the mill that way. when I was 5 years old. I grew up that way, and when I got to be 16, 17, 18 years old, well, before I was 18 years old, I dropped out of school because I knew more about sawmilling and logging than any of those teachers did, so why should I waste my time? The purpose of my life was to take over the sawmill from Dad and carry on, do the logging and sawmilling, and it's going to be mine. That was my purpose in life. But God had a different purpose for me. I knew I wouldn't have to go in the military service because of this ear infection. In fact is, when I was 18 years old, of course, I had to sign up for the draft. And when I signed up for the draft, and then still having earaches, still having infection in my ears, and I can remember one morning, about 2 o'clock in the morning or 3, my ears were aching and aching so bad, I just felt that both of them, I couldn't take it any longer. And I crawled, I just couldn't even stand up and walk, it was hurting so much. And I crawled down the stairs and banged on my parents' bedroom door. Dad wondered what's the matter, and I told him, I says, these earaches are getting so bad, I just can't take it any longer. We've got to do something. So he called the doctor at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, these old telephones, you ring them like this. Younger generation don't know about those, but the doctor, and doctors don't do this now either, I don't think. He says, well, meet me in my office over at Morton, that was in Morton, Washington. And so we met him there, but on the way to the doctor, one eardrum burst open. So much pressure, it burst. And of course, then the pus comes, but the pain was relieved then. And when we got to there, he checked me over real good, no antibiotics, of course, and he looked in my ears, and finally he said, the only one thing I can do, and he took his scalpel and he slit the other one open. What a relief. But day after day after day, I had to work cotton in my ears. It'd run down here while I was out working in the woods, working in the sawmill. And then it came time to go for my physical examination into the military. Well, I knew I wouldn't have to go. When I got there, well, I get a little ahead of my story here. I went to a specialist up in Tacoma, and that the specialist said, you're going to have surgery on these mastoid bones back here, and they'll chisel the bones open so they can get in there and scrape it all out, the infection, and put antiseptic in there on both sides. So we arranged for the surgery a week later so I could go down to be with my sisters taking nurses training in Portland Adventist Hospital. And when we got down there, before we went down there, Dad says, I'm going to take you to another specialist. He says, we've been praying. We've been praying for your ear problem. So he took us to another specialist over in Chehalis, Washington. Now, we were working close to Morton there, but not far to Chehalis, went over there. And he pulled the cotton out of my ears and took cotton swabs and cleaned them out. They get awful messy. And he says, I don't know where that infection's coming from. And, you know, an 18-year-old, we sometimes kind of smart off. And I said, well, Doc, I know where it's coming from. Where? It's coming from the holes in my eardrums and coming from the mastoids, and I'm supposed to be going down to have surgery on them. He says, you don't have any holes in your eardrums. Well, I said, I do too. If you don't believe it, you just call Dr. Clark over in Morton, he slit one of them open and the other one burst open. And I've been draining and pussy ever since. You saw the pus. He looked in my ears again with his otoscope and he said, you have no holes in your eardrums. A miracle? It has to be. I have never had an earache from that day on. And that's been quite a few days ago. The Lord had a purpose for my life. And the purpose led me into the military service. Now, that doesn't sound right, but it did. But the devil was trying to keep me out of the service. Why? Well, he didn't want me to follow the Lord's purpose. Because when I went to go for my physical then, went over to Chehalis where they got on the bus and went up to Fort Lewis, and they couldn't find my registration card. Searched and searched for it. And finally a lady came in another room waving and said, I found it. And the lady at the desk said, where'd you find it? It was in the deceased file. I was dead. I would never have had to go to the Army. I didn't want to go to the Army. I got in, took my basic training down in Abilene, Texas, and then went to out into the CBI, China, Burma, India Theater. And out there I got on the Burma Road. Some of you heard of the Burma Road, some of you old timers, and the Lido Road. And when the war was over, I was actually in charge of a Jeep motor pool. And I had the best Jeep in the whole outfit because I kept it up real good. And the captain, we'd heard about a little mission school way out in Assam, a little place called Jawai. And we wanted to go out and see that little mission school. So my buddy and I, and the captain gave me a week off, gave us a week off, and we drove my Jeep and we went out there. When we got out there to Shillong, they said, well, you can go a little ways, but you're going to have to walk for about 10 miles to get into that school. There's no road. Well, I don't know. You don't know me, but we drove the Jeep out there. Even there wasn't any road. We had stair steps to go up. And we had trail, switchbacks on the trail where I had to put one wheel on the trail and one wheel up on the bank and go around like this, that Jeep. And we got out there. And I'm telling you, we got out there on, I believe it was Friday afternoon. And when I saw these Naga kids, the Nagas in that area out in there are cannibals, the Naga tribe. And when I saw those kids singing praises to God, dressed in clean little uniforms and just having a great time, it just seemed to me that God tapped me on the shoulder and says, I brought you out here because I want you to be a missionary. All my purpose was to be a sawmill man and a logger, and I had no intention of anything else. But from that moment on, I didn't want to do anything else but mission service. And I tell you this because God had the purpose for my life. It wasn't my purpose. It wasn't the thing that I wanted to do, but he turned me around and showed me the purpose for my life. And that's then what I wanted to do. I went back, even though I hadn't finished the academy, and they did let me into college, and I got through college. And while I was going through college, I knew I had to have somebody with me. I couldn't go out alone. And so I know God led me to Jean. And he led me there in kind of a strange way because I had a tooth that needed filled. and so I went to the dentist during camp meeting time. Dad always shut down the sawmill. I worked there during the summers. We were at Estacada then. And we'd go to camp meeting. And he said, you better get that tooth fixed while camp meeting time so you won't have to take off work. So I went to the dentist that he had gone to, and the dental assistant and the dentist were talking about flying airplanes all the time. And I had, and when I first started college, I learned to fly a little airplane and had one. And he was going to give her a ride one of these days, but they were talking this flying. I couldn't do much talking. You know how it is when you're in a dentist office. they got their hands in your mouth all the time. But I was leaving the last time, and I had my hand on the doorknob, and I looked down at the dental assistant, and I said, when are you going to go flying with me? And she said, when are you going to ask me? I said, tomorrow. No, I can't go tomorrow. I found out later that she had a date with somebody else. But day after tomorrow, I can go. So I picked her up, and we flew out. She wanted to take some pictures of her parents' farm out there was out from Hillsboro, up on the hill there, on Laurel, they call it, over the mountains from Laurelwood, mountains this way. And she was taking pictures, wanted to get a closer picture. As I come down by the front of the house, and before she knew it, I was landing on the field right there in front of the house. Well, that caused quite a stir in the community, but... And it's kind of strange. I offered any of the rest of the family wanted to take a ride. And she had brothers. None of them wanted to go for a ride with me, but her grandma. And I took her grandma for a ride. But we started going to camp meeting. And then later she took Bible studies. And then later we went overseas. And we've gone up into the mountains of Laos, northern Laos. And up there in the mountains, sometimes things were pretty rough. When we got up there, there was no place for us to live. There was supposed to be a place, house or something fixed for us to live. There was nothing there. And so we had our suitcases. We had gone in by plane. There's no roads. Little airstrip, and the airplane took us in there, and there's no roads. And we had our suitcases, no beds, no mattresses, just suitcases. And luckily we had a little pump-up kerosene stove in our suitcase. And a Pakistani man, here's another Muslim, he said, "Well, you can share my hut. There's a bamboo hut with a beautiful dirt floor, nature, you know. And so half of it he wasn't using, half of it he was using. And there was a raised platform about this high, and slatted bamboo was our bed and our mattress and everything. And we slept with our heads right next to the partition on his side. And it wasn't too bad. Our kids wondered what in the world's going on. I know... First thing, a little while there, said, where's the bathroom? Well, we said, we take baths down on the river. That's way ways down there with the rest of the people. Yeah, but what about the toilet? And God led us together. And not long ago, we celebrated our 60th anniversary. And I tell you this, many times over there in there, living in the bamboo hut and doing out there in the jungle work, in the mountains of Laos, I wondered, why in the world, Lord, did you ever bring us here? Why? In a place like this. And then especially, we were only there 5 years, or four years, and we had a nice little church build up, and things were going good, and then the communists came in, and if it hadn't been for my airplane, we'd have never gotten out. We were surrounded completely. A helicopter landed one day, right by the church when I was preaching. And everybody, we all ran out there. And the pilot didn't even shut down his rotors, an American pilot. They were helping to train the Lao to try to hold back the communists. And he yelled at me and he says, "If you're going to get your family and people out of here, you better get them out now because you are already surrounded. The village of Nam Tha is all surrounded with the communist forces." Then he took off. Well, I tell you, I stopped preaching and started flying. And we were able to fire our family out. We were able to fire our students from our school we had started there from the mountains. Then things went on. And the little school, we took over on the banks of the Thailand, out from Laos, on the banks of the Mekong River. And the little school, we continued on there. And those kids grew up. They went on for higher education even. And I think it was four of them became pastors. I was talking in the mission office. I walked in one day in Thailand. The mission president stood up. And he recognized me. I didn't recognize him. And he said, "If you had not brought me out of the mountains of Laos when I was a little boy, I'd have never known Jesus. Lord, why am I here?" And then we had another one visit us, a retired pastor from that school, visit us here in Lebanon. He came to see some relative in the Seattle area and then came down to visit us. I asked him, I said, I interviewed him at the church. I said, why did you ever decide to be a pastor? I hadn't known. And he said they were sending you because there was a Filipino missionary there that we'd evacuated to. And he said, they are sending you to Borneo to be a missionary. And he said, I just thought, he was just one of the kids. I thought, you're the only one that had ever taken the message of your God to our villages. And he said, we would never, who would go now? You're being shipped away. Nobody will ever go tell our people about Jesus, about God. And he said, so I decided to be a pastor. And he took us out and showed us five churches that he'd raised up in the edges of the mountains there in northern Laos, northern Thailand. Why am I here? God had a purpose for our lives, and God has a purpose for your life. And as we think about this, and I think about this in closing, the purpose that he has for our lives, number one, God has this purpose, is to love him. He says, love the Lord thy God with all your heart and all your soul. Another purpose is to be in his family, to be the children of God. That's one of the purposes he has for your life and mine. And to be like him, rooted and grounded in him, adopted as sons and daughters of our God. And to serve him unto all the world. Tell others about him. Not necessarily. My mission was around the world somewhere. Your mission may be next door. Your mission may be in this town, maybe here, maybe there. Is to share the gospel message. And you talk about evangelistic meetings and ways to draw people to know our God. And so these are some of the purposes that he has for our lives. Problems? Do you ever have problems when you're trying to follow the purpose of God? You think of the old prophets. Some of them had a lot of problems. Well, this is what problems do to us. They force us to focus on God. If we're sick even, or some of our family, it focuses us on praying and drawing us closer to God. You know, what does it say about the Lord? He chastens who he loves, you know? Who the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. We have problems because he loves us. He wants us to be drawn to him. Think about our little students. I need to stop here, but I think about our little students up there in Nam Tha. One little boy is the smallest one of the whole group. He wasn't necessarily the youngest, but he was the smallest. And I heard him one time telling the other students, he says, Pastor Hall, this wasn't in English, by the way, John Hon, Pastor Hall loves me more than he does you guys. They were kind of scrapping a little bit. He loves me more than he does you guys. And I heard one of them say, how do you know that? Because, he says, he spanks me just like he does his own son, Mark. Well, sometimes we have to be spanked. Sometimes we have to suffer. So problems force us closer to focus on God and closer to fellowship with each other. If your brother or sister in the church or in the neighborhood has a problem, you go to help them, pray for them, do what you can to help them solve their problems, and that draws you together, doesn't it? If there was no problem there, it wouldn't happen. And it helps us to build a character, builds our character to face problems. And it provides a ministry. Like I say, if someone else is having problems, it gives you a ministry to go and minister to them and their problems. And it gives you a testimony of the love of God. And we are to express the love of God in our lives so that others can want to live like we live. and follow our Lord. And so as we think of this, and when we come to the end of time and meet the great judge, he may ask us questions like this. Did you put Jesus at the center of your life? Did you develop his character in love and helping others and giving them love and grace? Did you devote your life to serving others? Devote your life to serving others. Not self. God has this work for us to do to serve others. Did you love and participate in his family? And that's why we're here now. We're family. We're brothers and sisters, sons and daughters of our Creator God. Shall we pray? Our Father in heaven, we know that you have a purpose for our lives, and we pray that you'd help us to follow this purpose. Even though we may be walking and have walked in the wrong direction, dear Lord, as did some of the prophets of old, we just pray that you'd help us to turn around and make that determination and decision today in our own hearts to follow you, the path that you would lead us. And we know that path, even though it may lead us into some problems and trials and suffering, we know that the ultimate purpose for our lives is that you want us to live so that we can be with you in your kingdom and in the new world. We thank you, our Heavenly Father. Amen.